Hey, boys and girls, welcome back to episode 31 of the Tumbling Saber podcast. We now just sit 165 days until Rogue One, and as Mark Hamill reminded us, about 19 days until the end of episode 8, Principal Photography. And guys, these numbers are starting to shrink, get smaller and smaller by the week here. How you feeling, Corey?
I'm actually doing pretty horrible. I had a really rough weekend. I had my old roommate came into town from Toronto, and it was horrible. I'm too old for this.
That doesn't sound promising.
No, it wasn't good. But I'm here, and I'm happy to be here.
Well, at least you guys didn't do any Molly or anything. that you know of, right?
Exactly.
James, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing terrific. Fantastic. Amazing. Yeah. I feel like a million bucks. I might go for a run after the podcast.
Dude, I literally wanted... I told you guys before, I literally wanted to give up on life today. I just stared at the floor like a vegetable at my buddy's house, just outside. Didn't even want to talk to anyone. Just wanted to be left alone.
So like you said in the Talk Star Wars promo that we did, like where you just sort of stare at the show or stare at the floor after we do the show, today you were staring at the floor regardless?
Yeah, all day. It was done. I was done like dinner.
Damn.
Yeah, it was rough. You can even, the first thing Kyle says to me, I call him, he's like, what's wrong with your voice?
Like, oh. What was your poison last night? Was it, were you drinking booze or beer or everything?
Last night? Yeah, we were just drinking beer. Just drinking some beers, but the night before too, like he was in town for three nights, so it's Friday, Saturday shit show. It was horrible.
The pile up, yeah.
I remember those days.
I'm done. I want to remember this day being the last day.
Ah, that's awesome. You're saying that while you're still feeling bad. That's adorable. Yeah.
How many times, James, how many times do you figure you said, I'm never drinking again?
Lots. Can't count them. Too many.
Yeah, I would think that's the number is too many.
Yeah.
Every time I feel like Corey.
Yeah. Yeah. It was horrible. I haven't felt like this in years. Years. I don't know if I've ever felt this bad. Getting old sucks.
Yeah, man. It's a rude awakening. If you go a while without having a serious bender and then suddenly you're in your mid-30s and you try it again, it is not the same as when you're in your 20s at any point.
No.
Recovery is a grueling ordeal.
I was already trying to figure a way to get out of work tomorrow. Like halfway through the day, that was like popped in my mind. It's like, no, you're done. It's like a three day hangover.
That's bad. That is bad.
From all the Brits I've ever known, you're gonna lose a little points from the lads over at Talk Star Wars. Because there's one thing about the guys from the UK, they seem to all have this attitude, like never complain about your hangover and get up and work as if life is normal. It's a crazy concept to us North Americans, but that's how.
No, I understand that. I've been to work, you know, when I was younger. Obviously, you know, you're staying up all night with your buddies and you do it. You got to be a trooper and get in there to work, man.
Yeah, well, we could all do it when we're younger, Corey. But these lads do it when they're 50. That's what's impressive.
Yeah, that kind of is impressive.
It really is.
I feel like I can throw our good pal Tony Bureau under the bus right now with a story. He won't listen to this, so maybe I should just do it.
Do it right now. Go for it. I'm glad you named names before you told the story too. Perfect.
Oh, yeah. Well, like I said, he's never going to hear this. So unless one of you two out me, he won't mind. He won't mind. So 20 years ago, he was not a drinker. It was just not part of his nature. He was actually anti-drinking. He didn't care if any of us did it, but it was just not for him.
I remember.
And right, you remember he would go to where you were working and he just wouldn't drink.
Right.
So that summer, I think it was actually summer of 97, I want to say, or 98 maybe. I got him a job where I was working, and we had some coworkers who were in and around our age, and they were just animals. And then they found out that Tony didn't drink, and they worked him all summer, just working the body all summer long, trying to get him to break down and say, fine, our last day of work, I'll go drinking with you guys. And so that night we went to Annie's, our old watering hole, James's former employer.
Yeah.
And it was just a gorgeous night, just at the end of summer.
Right by everybody's the water.
Yeah, gearing up for back to school or whatnot. Actually, no, it was a Thursday night, because that was still the night to go out.
It was the big night at Annie's. That was it's a college town. There's a boardwalk right on the water. It was the place to be in. And on Thursday nights, you waited in line a long time to get in unless you knew one of the doormen or, you know, staff inside.
Yeah, or if you were like us and you were furniture and you practically lived there.
Super regulars. Well, that's it. You were buddies with the staff, right? Like there was.
Yeah, I suppose.
I'd say 5% of the crowd would walk right past the huge lineup and straight in the door.
So yeah, but anyway, we were there for dinner anyway. So actually, it was a pretty good kitchen back then.
Awesome. Great food.
And so we were enjoying our night, and Tony hadn't started drinking yet, but because I had one day left of work, I checked out pretty early, like 11 o'clock at night. After a couple drinks, I decided I was going to walk home and that would be the end of it. And Tony said, yeah, I'm not going to be far behind you, but I'm going to stick around for a bit. And I think by that point, he had already had like a beer. I said, you're going to be fine? Yeah, don't worry. I'm taking off soon. All right. And so I went home, got up the next morning, did my routine, drove to Tony's house to pick him up. And usually it was like all summer long, it was like clockwork. We were in sync, and he would see my van pull up in front of his place, and he'd be out 10 seconds later. So this time it was 10 seconds, 60 seconds, 600 seconds. He must be just in a shower or something. I'll go up and see if he's all right. So I go and I walk up the stairs into his apartment, and it's silent. Well, this doesn't sound promising. I'm standing in the entrance and I look across. I could see into his bathroom. Lights are out. Doesn't look like there's been any action in there. Uh-oh. I look into the kitchen. I don't see his lunchbox out. I don't see anything packed. Oh, no. I walk into his bedroom and Tony's on the floor and he's a shade of green. Oh, no. What's happening? And so I pick up a basketball and start dribbling it on the floor right next to his head.
That's awesome.
And he doesn't wake up. And after a couple of minutes of that, he finally comes to. And he could barely speak. He could barely get words out. I think he was probably still hammered.
For sure.
So he's like, oh, what the hell? What happened to you? He's like, oh, it was brutal, man. Brutal. What the hell? I said, dude, we work in like 15 minutes. He's like, oh. He just gets out of bed. Throw some like frozen food into a plastic grocery bag and we take off for work. And then he tells me the whole story, but he made it through about half an hour of a shift at work that day. He actually went and punched out. His last day of work, he just couldn't do it. He's like, forget it, man. This is my last day. I'm never working here again. I'm out. And he went and he slept in the back of my van for the entire day.
That's amazing. In the hot van, in the hot sun.
And every few minutes, someone from the warehouse would run out to my van and start shaking it. They would not let him off the hook the entire day. That was it. That was Tony's first step down a dark path that led him to spending what, thousands of dollars in Annie's, probably.
Oh, easily.
Easily. I mean, each one of us just poured our savings into the till there.
You guys were serious regulars.
Oh my God, it was crazy. So worth it though.
Yeah, great times.
Though questionable, I looking back now and being at Annie's at 11 a.m. to watch The Price is Right with a beer in hand was probably not the best decision.
Should have started with a Caesar.
No, I think the point is just being at a bar at 11 a.m. when you should have been in class was probably not a good decision. I don't know, that's just me. Your mileage may vary.
Fair enough.
All right, so there's a quick little 10-minute tangent to start the show. Let's get into the galaxy far, far away here. Like I said off the top, 165 days until Rogue One. I remember not too long ago, that number was up around 300.
Yeah.
And we kind of ignored it for a little while.
40 days ago or so, we were talking like that.
Yeah, it was 200 days. And then we crossed the threshold. It's 198 days. And then we just sort of forgot about it for a little bit. And now that number, 165, that looks pretty small to me now.
Yep.
It's coming, man. It's coming.
When we're in the double digits, when we're in 98 days to go, then it's gonna get real.
Well, that's it, right? But that's like 2 months from now. So at the end of summer,
yeah,
we'll crack that 100. And then it's going to start. It's gonna, the number itself will look small, But then those days will seem much longer.
You can start counting in weeks almost at that point, you know?
Yeah, it'll feel much more real and tangible at that point, you know? You're stuck in a bit of butterflies almost about it.
Yeah, for sure. But more immediately, not breaking news, but recently Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker, had tweeted that there was 19, or the wrapping, not 19 days left, but there's 19 days left now. But at the time, he had revealed that July 22nd was going to be the last day of shooting.
Yeah, loose lips sink starships, I think was the tagline.
That was the hashtag.
Which I liked.
He's very clever. He's really clever with his Twitter usage.
I always wonder the clever ones if they hire someone. Now, Mark Hamill isn't like the kind of star that I would suspect of doing that. Beyond the fact that he's often very clever, you're right. So, I always wonder, like, is there an agent or a publicist or like just some college kid who's a English lit major who's just putting out the smart stuff or what? What do you think?
No, I think he handles it for himself.
But what about in general? What do you think? Do you think
in general, I think it depends.
There's people doing that for sure, though, right?
Oh, absolutely, for sure. There's tons of celebrities that, they let one of their publicists or a brother or anybody take care of that.
Their funny friend who they like or whatever, yeah.
And once in a while, they'll log in and say something themselves and probably immediately regret it, but...
Post a picture of a six-starred Hillary Clinton ad. Did you see that? We won't get political on the show, but Trump immediately regretted a tweet yesterday.
Trump regretted something?
Oh, yeah. It's, I know. Rare and shocking.
I thought he regrets nothing.
Yeah.
That must have been pretty bad if Donald Trump regretted
it. If he had to take it down and change something that he, you know, if he has to retract something, then you know it's really bad.
Wow. That's shocking.
Yeah.
So anyway, Hamill tweets this, and guess who went crazy?
Everyone.
The clickbait sites. They had a field day because Mark Hamill had followed up his statement saying, after July 22nd, then I'm out of work. And what did they do, the clickbait sites?
He's dead.
Well, he's dead. Confirmed. Mark Hamill just revealed that he dies in episode 8, and they all, like sheep, ran with it. Pumping out their stupid stories. Now, I have this vision of the writers for these clickbait sites. When they're typing, they're screaming as loud as they can until they hit publish. Like they're just so frantic trying to get their junk on the web that I don't know if the screaming ramps up their adrenaline or whatnot. I feel like they do something extremely stupid.
But you said it too, man. Like, Mark Hamill's not a stupid guy. Like, for him to have said that, it's almost like he said it purposefully to cause a bit of, like, melee, you know, like, kind of stir the pot a bit. Like, those words are really, you know, he could have chose different words, but he chose those words which are somewhat ambiguous. So people jump all over that right away.
Yeah, they totally jumped all over that. It was unbelievable. And then, of course, as all the sane people in the world... roll their eyes and just sort of laugh at these clickbait sites. Actually, you know what? There's probably a lot of people that take them plenty seriously, but the smart people or halfway reasonable people completely roll their eyes about it. But then, you know, I feel like Mark Hamill knew exactly what he was doing
when he said that.
So he had to clarify his statement saying, listen, guys, I just said, like, the movie's over. Like, we're done shooting. I'm not going to be working for a while. That's all I meant. And I believe that's...
I absolutely believe that's true. Yes. Yes.
That's the case. He just wants to stir the pot.
Well, I don't even know if he wanted to stir the pot. I wouldn't be surprised if he wanted to stir the pot, but it's a pretty innocuous thing to say, I'm out of work after that. Because he probably is out of work. He's probably not going to have another... acting gig for a few months. So while it seemed pretty innocuous to him, whether he realized how people would take it or not, well, the clickbait sites, they knew what to do with that info. And then, of course, when he cleared it up, they doubled down and double dipped. And then all those sites, the same sites that ran with that Luke Skywalker dies story, well, they said, well, Luke, now he clarifies the statement and just said that, listen, I just meant that I have no work after.
Do you mind if I take the wind out of the sails even a little bit more?
Sure.
Even if Luke died, that wouldn't put him out of work in the Star Wars storytelling universe.
Force ghost.
No, it wouldn't. So this,
oh, you're 100% right.
The comment is holds even less water.
And again, like I've said many times on the show for many reasons, if people would just do a few minutes of research, you would know that Mark Hamill probably isn't dying in this movie because Colin Trevorrow has already said, it's on record of him saying that he's looking forward to working with Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher in episode 9. So yeah, it's possible that Mark Hamill appears as a Force ghost in episode 9, but I think it's more than likely that Luke Skywalker survives episode 8 in his protein form.
I think so too, but yeah.
I'm rooting for him. Like, I have to say, like, when I was a kid, like, really young, Luke was, like, my favorite as, like, a 5-year-old kid. And then as I got a bit older, I was kind of like, Luke's kind of whiny. I'm more of a Han guy now. But now seeing this new role that he's taken on and just how he's embracing Star Wars, it's like he's really, he's up there for me now, again. Like, he always has been, but, you know.
He's always embraced it, but now with social media, he's just been able to I guess, be more immediate and more, what's the word I'm looking for? More present at any given moment.
Yeah, he's more in touch with the fans than, you know, anyone could ever be before.
Oh, he's loving this, for sure. Those clickbait sites, they must feel that he is like the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. There's always Sam Jackson.
Oh, there's Sam Jackson. Oh, man, I guess that's a pretty good place to go next, I suppose.
Yeah, I know you weren't heading there next, but the segue was right there for me.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That's a good move. So Sam Jackson thinks that Mace Windu could have survived his ordeal at the hands of Darth Sidious in episode 3. And I thought he was an okay character. I thought Sam Jackson was kind of miscast in that role.
Totally miscast. He was Sam Jackson in the movie. I saw Sam Jackson the whole time.
Yep. I didn't see Mace Windu.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say it differently. I didn't see Sam Jackson. I just felt like it was... I don't know who it was. Like, it felt like... not like a mailed-in performance. But I didn't take the character seriously in either Attack of the Clones or The Phantom Menace or Revenge of the Sith.
Like
it just the performance just didn't have any weight for me anyway.
He tried to be like so wise, and I was like, yeah, I'm not buying it, you know? Go grow a beard like James or something.
Now that would carry some weight.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah, I didn't like Sam Jackson in that role. I like the character, but I didn't like Sam Jackson in it.
Agreed.
So anyway, he thinks that Mace Windu, having his hand chopped off, and then
that kills nobody in Star Wars.
That kills nobody in Star Wars, but it doesn't feel good. It doesn't help your situation at all.
True, true.
He wouldn't be out though with the lightsaber. It's like instant cauterization.
Well, then he got cooked by Palpatine and his Force lightning, and of course he fell from however high up they were.
I mean, yeah, they were like 1,000 stories up.
That's like a triple whammy.
Yeah, but Darth Maul lived, didn't he?
Yeah.
I suppose you're right. Darth Maul did live.
Robot garbage legs and.
But you can kind of argue in Maul's case that he's like Mace Windu was a human, right? So, like Darth Maul, you can kind of, okay, he's an alien. Like maybe they're tougher than us or whatever. He's got horns growing out of his head, so.
That's true.
But yeah, I could break this down in one shot. Like you just said, he gets zapped and then chucked out the window. Even if he could, like, you see it in Rebels, actually. There's this scene where they jump from like the stratosphere, like onto this comet out of the plane, right? And they're able to, like, Kanan's able to use the Force to, like, as soon as he's about to land, he kind of, like, Force pushes himself to, like, a safe landing. So, supposedly that was a Jedi thing back in the day, but he would have been so discombobulated after getting zapped and his arm lopped off that I just don't think he would have had the, but it is kind of a long fall, too. So maybe he had the time to get his head around the situation, but Yeah, it's not happening.
Pull out a cell phone, play a couple of games of solitaire on the way down. That probably would have been tough one-handed, though.
Yeah, but it's definitely, I think it's more Sam Jackson just, again, like, stirring the pot, saying, hey, I think in the article I read, he like, told George Lucas, like, no, my character's still alive. And George was just like, yeah, that's okay with me, if you want to believe that.
Yeah, George is not helping anybody's case, right? Except for Sam Jackson's. But, I mean, the Star Wars universe doesn't need more Mace Windu, does it?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I wouldn't be mad if I saw him again. I wouldn't be like, oh.
I kind of would be.
It's just not necessary.
Maybe Finn's his grandson or something, you know?
Bum, bum, oh, stop it. Stop it. Stop it.
Sorry.
Everybody in Star Wars has
like
to that,
but like, you know, to connect them, like, some connective tissue to the ongoing saga, but I don't see his character being important enough to really, you know, maybe in books or something, but.
No, I think Disney is, again, they're staying away from the prequels as long as they can. Which, you know what? I watched Phantom Menace again yesterday. I enjoyed it, man.
I like the movie. I have to say, I said it before, it's my favorite of the three. I actually like that movie.
It's my favorite, to be honest.
I don't want to rip on kid actors, but man, was Natalie Portman bad in that movie?
Disagree.
Really?
You know what? I can't say. I haven't seen it in so long, and I had a similar thing going for her that I have going for Rey.
Oh yeah, I mean, come on, she makes me weak in the knees. Like she's just stunning, but God, some of the delivery of the lines in that movie.
But again,
like there's nobody home.
Yeah, but that's
direction too, though. The director we discussed.
Yes, you're right. It's I usually always put that at the feet of the director.
He was like, his direction must have been like, no, more lifeless. No. No. There was too much energy in that. More like you feel like Corey does right now.
More dull. More dull.
Duller. Duller. Think beige. Have beige thoughts.
So what the hell are we talking about?
Natalie Portman. She's pretty.
Agreed. Agreed.
Sam Jackson clipbait. I threw us off schedule.
No, that's all right. Yeah, but again, we don't need more Mace Windu. They're staying away from the prequels, I think. And I think that probably is for the best. Besides, Mace Windu, if you brought him into Episode 8 era, would be, Christ, how old would he be? 130 years old?
Yeah, it's not going to work.
Something like that. And of course, you can always say, oh, the Force, man, he can stay alive a long time. Well, let's not get nuts. Like, you're still human. You have to be bound to
the laws of nature
to a certain degree. Like if Mace Windu lived to be a spry 100 years old, I'll buy that if the Force was giving him a little 10% bump there. Otherwise, come on. Just punch your clock like the rest of us.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Sam Jackson, thanks, but no thanks. You can, hey, unless they bring him back in some other vehicle, right? They could, I don't know if there's another animated series that they could bring him back in, but I think we've had our share of Mace Windu.
I think the point is too, is can he, do you actually think he could have survived that? And the answer is no.
Agreed. There's no way he survived that. Anyway, so moving on to our next story, and this being, the sort of the tail end of Canada Day weekend here. I think we wear our Canadian on our sleeve pretty proudly. So I came across this story, which is not new, and it probably isn't news to everybody listening. But for me, this was news, and it's kind of shocking because it takes place in our own backyard. Now, this story, the one that I read, came out the day before The Force Awakens hit theaters. But did you guys know that sort of the earliest seeds of Star Wars actually were planted in our own bloody backyards?
I didn't know, but I read the article and it was really interesting.
Isn't that nuts? So, James, did you check out the story?
I still don't know and I didn't read the article, so enlighten me.
Okay, so I'll give you the bullet points and for anybody out there who doesn't know this story. In 1964, a young Montreal filmmaker named Arthur Lipsett, he made this weird sort of 9-minute film called 2187. and that movie had one little piece of dialogue, and the line is, many people feel that in the contemplation of nature and in communication with other living things, they become aware of some kind of a force or something behind this apparent mask, which we see in front of us. So, that, I mean, as Star Wars fans, that concept sounds kind of familiar, right?
For sure.
Right. So in 1964, George Lucas was a young man. He was probably in his early 20s. And he was a film student at USC in California. And for whatever reason, they got a steady diet of Canadian content. And so this weird movie, 2187, was part of it. Lucas loved it. And he watched this movie again and again. So he credits, George Lucas credits this weird feature for his first short film, which was called The Electronic Labyrinth THX11384EB, set in the year 2187. Huh. And of course, later on, he did his first full feature movie called THX1138, in which I think the character in that movie is supposed to die. And they say in the story that the character's death occurs in the year or occurs on the date 2187. So this is by this point, it's the early 70s. So, I mean, we see these numbers now, right? 2187.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what? The story ends pretty sadly. So Arthur Lipsett, he apparently committed suicide in 1986, totally unaware of what effect his movie had on George and what George had brought into the world. So in 1986, Star Wars mania had, I don't say come and gone, but it had certainly come. And apparently he was completely oblivious to the whole thing, which as a filmmaker, I don't know what happened to the guy, but that seems kind of weird, no?
Yeah.
Anyways, this guy was blissfully or sadly unaware. And Lucas ended up paying tribute to Lipsett in A New Hope, because the cell that Princess Leia is imprisoned in A New Hope is 2187.
Yeah.
And then, not that Lucas had anything to do with it at that point, but Finn's call sign as a stormtrooper is FN2187. So there's that seed, 2187, going right back 52 years. It's right in our own backyard of Montreal. So I think, hey, a little point of pride for us there, guys.
Very cool.
Yeah, it was really interesting. The article was really good. It was like saying how Lucas like really admired the guy's use of like light and visual, like a lot of play with like sounds and nature, and like
he totally inspired Lucas in some weird way, which I think is awesome. Like I can't believe this story had never crossed my field of view until now.
Yeah, it was really interesting.
That is super cool.
Yeah, man. So now you can always tell people that without Montreal, there's no Star Wars.
Basically, I started Star Wars. You're welcome, world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Montreal.
We gave you Star Wars. You're welcome.
We were like the what the hell were we? What's before the egg gets fertilized?
We were like the first organism.
The embryo. Water.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome, though.
I think it's super awesome. Montreal's super awesome, though, so I'm not shocked.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Especially back in the 60s.
We have our load of we have a lot of BS here.
Yeah, that's true too. That's true.
But a pretty cool city nonetheless. All right, moving right along here. We talked about this not too long ago, about whether or not somebody from Star Wars animated features could ever jump across to the big screen. And I don't know if Corey, I don't know if you were on that episode, but I think James, you and I were kind of in agreement that that was probably not going to happen, right?
I remember the show and we sort of said that we thought it was unlikely.
Well, now we know that it's not only likely, it's absolutely happening as Forrest Whitaker's character is
Sam Guerrera.
Yeah. Yeah, Corey's buddy, Sam Guerrera. Yeah. I don't think anybody really questioned me on that. So anyway, Saw Guerrera ripped right out of the Clone Wars series and dropping into Rogue One, which I think is super cool. But apparently we're going to get more of that in the future. As Simon Kinberg, who is one of the producers of Rebels, he said, here's this quote. He was talking to actually MoviePhone. And so he said, what's lovely is obviously we've brought characters from Clone Wars in the second season, and we keep sort of bringing characters from the original movies and sort of deepening the relationships between our core characters, the Ghost Crew. So it's trying to balance the two different things, like the original cast from the first season with Clone Wars, with characters from the original movies, and maybe even feeding into future movies, which I think is, well, I don't know if they have any concrete plans, but...
Well, it definitely opens a window, like, especially like in the article, the last sentence of what you read is like highlighted. Like, that's what you're taking away from this.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, like I said, if there's nothing concrete planned, the possibility is definitely on the table, and I'm sure they probably have ideas of what they'd like to do. So, James, I think you and I were both wrong, man.
Well, you know, it's happened once before. I made a mistake. Last time I thought I had made a mistake, but this one might be the first legit.
It all depends on the character, though. It all depends on the character. Like, Saw Gerrera, obviously, like, not suit someone that we know all that well. Like, it kind of still fits. There's so much meat on the bone still that you can say, like, you don't know anything about his past or what happens in between, so...
Yeah, and I don't know. I'd have to go back to the episode, but I think the conversation was more... I think the question that we were discussing was something to the effect of, will they bring a character from the animated series into the saga? And we said, no, we won't have to watch a cartoon to understand the movies. But this isn't this is the spin-off movie. So I think that fits into its own sort of subcategory. I don't know if our answer would have been the same.
Yeah, you're right. There's probably an extra layer of granularity there that may have, or nuance that would have changed our answer a bit.
This is the way to jump it in and move those characters, you know, into the saga eventually, probably.
Yeah, and I can't remember if I was very against the idea, but I gotta say I'm excited, because when the news came out a couple weeks ago that Forrest Whitaker was playing a character that we already knew a little bit about, I was stoked, man. That was a really cool reveal to me. So either if it confirmed what I felt before or negated what I felt, it completely made me buy in, like, immediately. I thought that was just the coolest thing.
That's great. And it doesn't affect me negatively as a guy who hasn't seen. You know, like, I'm not concerned. I don't think that they're gonna make it so that those who aren't fans of the animated series are going to be out of the loop. You know what I mean? I just hope for you guys you don't get a lot of shitty feeder lines where they, you know, explain backstory in a crappy way.
No, like the four Clone Wars episodes where you see this character, he's more than a background character, and he's actually pretty key to the arc, but it's a pretty self-contained story. Like, he's part of a cell, an uprising on his homeworld. And then he gets a quick, a blink and you miss it, shout out in Bloodline, the novel that came out a few months ago. But it's really a throwaway line. Most people who read the novel didn't pick up on it either. And then, of course, the news came out a couple weeks ago and brought everything back up to the forefront. But I'm down, man.
Yeah, I'm excited.
So again, let's do some revisionist history here. What was your guys' excitement levels for the Han Solo movie?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it on the podcast many times. Like, I think it has the potential to be such a cool movie. Like, he's the coolest dude in the galaxy. And his backstory, how he meets Chewie, the Falcon, Lando, card playing, Sabacc, all that. He's a scoundrel, and I just can't wait to see him as a young man. And like I said, like, it must be a writer's paradise to be able to explore this kind of thing. And yeah. I have high hopes. I have very high hopes.
I'm with you, but I think it's like a nightmare and a curse for writers as well. There's so much expectation, and what a daunting task. But yeah, I also said I was super excited. I know why you ask that. Apparently, you know, rumor is that the script is just out of this world good. And even though I know what else are people going to say, I still got super excited when I heard this.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, so the Star Wars fans know him pretty well. Ian McKeag, who worked, did some concept art for the prequels, and now he's obviously into the sequel era, he said that the Han Solo movie has by far the best Star Wars script and one of the best scripts, period, that I've ever read. I laughed, I cried, I did all the things that you should do when reading a good script. You're in for a treat. Now, like you said, James, what else is he supposed to say?
Well, of course, that's what he's going to say. But still, I still got really excited, and maybe it's because I want to. I believe him.
No, but it's like he seemed genuine. Like the way he describes it, you laugh, you cry, you hurl. You know, like it's like. Anyway, I'm so genuine. I believed him, and you know, I have high hopes for this movie. It's going to be great.
Or because he didn't have to be that effusive, right? He could have just said, yeah, I read the script. It's awesome. Like, Star Wars fans are going to love it. And he could have just left it at that, and we would have said the same thing. Oh, that's a pretty good endorsement, and short and sweet. But he went on and on about.
Yeah, he went out of his way.
So I think, again, that like James said, that I want to believe him, and I'm buying what he's selling.
Me too. Sign me up.
I agree.
And again, I guess you can always sort of say, well, he's a concept artist. You know, he's not a director. He's not a writer or whatever you want to call him. How much weight do you put into it?
A lot. A lot more so than say, a publicist or an agent or an accountant. Everyone's got an opinion on what they like in movies, but he's just because he's not a director, he's still an artist, which I don't know, for me, carries more weight.
Yeah, and again, he didn't have to be this effusive about the movie. If he thought it was okay, he could have just said, yeah, it's fine. It's going to really knock people's socks off. I can't wait to see it on screen.
Right.
But that movie, like you said, that movie, it has the potential to do all those things. Like, in my head, I could see it, you know, like Han and Chewie meeting. It's going to be so emotional. Like, it's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting, adventurous.
Now, do you guys, is there anything you don't want to see in a Han Solo movie?
Yes. I don't want to see him walk by and bend down to pick something up while a young Princess Leia looks over his head and doesn't see him and then continues on her way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel like they could get way too out of control with the fan service in this movie.
I don't need to see that stuff. I don't need, yeah, I think there's enough cool backstory potential without having to sort of, yeah, do that kind of service stuff.
Yeah, I don't need to see it.
You guys remember as well, we talked about this in the past, that there were potential rumors about a trilogy on this spinoff, right?
I bet you a company like Disney has like a backdoor open for a spinoff on any of these. Like, if Rogue One is a super smash, then there might be Rogue 2 and 3. Like, I know time frame wise, it doesn't really work in terms of what they're doing, their mission, and then what comes up in the movies we've already seen. But I'm sure they still have a backdoor plan to make more movies and milk as much of they can out of anything that turns into a monster success.
Yeah, and play it for sure. Here. Whatever makes, like, whatever's making more money, they're kind of taking hints from that playbook, you know?
Yeah.
Like, Han Solo will be written in such a way that it's self-contained, but obviously doors are open for parts 2 and 3.
I would think so.
I think that's a gimme.
Kyle,
do you want to see Boba Fett in this movie?
That's what I was going to ask you. What are the chances you think Boba Fett's going to be in this movie?
Are you asking me what do I think or what do I want?
Yeah, no. Give me percentage-wise, what do you think? Like, what do you think they'll do it, or?
I think it's inevitable. So I'll stop short of saying 100%, but I will go into the 90s that Boba Fett will be in it. And as for myself, I don't really want to see Boba Fett. I don't think I need to, at least not yet. Like James said, if this is a smash hit and they want to do Han Solo Part 2, now you can work in Boba Fett. I don't mind if I see Boba Fett in the movie, just sort of in the background. But I don't think he needs to play a role.
I agree. I think he needs no more lines than he had in the original trilogy.
Yeah.
I think you just need to know that he's there kind of as a threat.
Looking for him. He should always have been sort of looking for him for, you know, I don't know exactly when the story is set and when maybe we'll see why he's looking for him and when the back.
I wouldn't even go that far. I would just say like they kind of allude to who Boba Fett is, who he works for and what he does.
Yeah, you're right. That'd be enough.
And then of course, Jabba's going to be in the Han Solo spinoff and Han Solo somehow going to screw him. And then at that point, if they do Han Solo Part 2, then you know, okay, Jabba's sending Boba Fett after him. I think that in my head, that's how it should work. But I totally don't need to have Boba Fett playing a significant role in Han Solo just because I feel like that'll be too fan service-y.
Yeah, exactly. And from what I remember as a kid as well, we had all these like Star Wars like encyclopedias and none of this is true anymore. It's all legends. Former EU, but he had a beef with Dengar. Remember Dengar, the bandaged guy? Like that poor looking like bounty hunter that just had bandages on him all the time. Supposedly Han's the one who gave him those wounds. That was like EU.
Well, I mean, they could bring it back and make that legit again. But again, that's the kind of stuff that sort of walks that line of cool to have back as official canon and fan service.
But you know what? I'd rather put it this way. I'd rather see Dengar in this movie than Boba Fett. Maybe see Boba Fett, like you guys said, like hanging out in some space junk or something, just in the background, in the shadows for like a second. But I don't want
to. I agree with you. I think it's time to shine a light on another bounty hunter.
Yeah.
It doesn't always have to be Boba Fett, right?
And that's kind of odd if you think about it, because he's done so well for himself, like merchandise-wise, that you think they would have exploited that. Like, hey, the bounty hunters are kind of cool. Like, we should kind of play on that a bit more.
You're not wrong. Yeah, I guess just to wrap up before we take a break here, the small part of me that is sort of apprehensive about this movie is that they might try and just do too much of the fan service stuff. And I hope they do something totally original with very minimal of the callbacks to stuff that us old school Star Wars fans feel like that we need to see.
Well, I think we need to see the genesis of how he gets the Falcon, the relationship between him and Chewie. What do you think the chances of, what about Lando? Do you think Lando's going to make a cameo?
I say yes on Lando, and do you think we're going to get to see him meet Chewie?
I hope the story's about them meeting up for the first time in a way, like Han rescuing, because supposedly Chewie was like a prisoner of the Empire, and Han kind of rescues him, you know, and then Chewie owes him a life debt.
Yeah, I think we'll see that. I think that's more likely to happen.
I could see them not getting along at first, too, and see their relationship slowly develop.
Yeah, there's probably a lot of comedic gold in there.
Like, I don't see Han either speaking Wookiee right off the bat. Like, it's probably something he's going to obviously have to learn.
Yeah, I guess it depends on how well-traveled they make Han when True. We first meet him.
Yeah.
Yeah, you think a good smuggler would speak a lot of languages.
Well, and again, that will beg the question of what's Han doing when we first meet him.
Right.
Is he an Imperial officer who decides to get the hell out, or is he already sort of a young scoundrel bouncing around the galaxy?
Yeah. Well, I really, again, I hope, I've said this before as well, I really hope we get to see Corellia. Because it's been written about, but they've never filmed it. And it's the whole, like, it's the, where all these cool characters come from, like Wedge, and that's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I would like to see a little bit of Corellia too. Okay, let's take a quick break here. I think it's a good spot to slide in our buddies here at Talk Star Wars. And I hope by now you guys have, all the listeners have added their awesome podcast to your playlist. But if not, here's their promo. And once you get done with this episode, head right over to Talk Star Wars and check them out. So here we go. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Hey guys.
Yeah?
we need to record a promo for the podcast. You got any suggestions?
Well, we need to keep it as simple as possible.
That sounds good.
Something like, if you like Star Wars and you listen to podcasts, you should check out the Talk Star Wars podcast on iTunes.
Or we could really motivate people to listen.
What do you have in mind?
Well, you could tell people they should listen to Talk Star Wars or they will feel the power of a fully armed and operational battle station.
Well, no. You can't do that.
Why?
We can't threaten people.
Oh.
Steve's right. Simple is probably best. Like this. I'm Mark.
I'm Stephen.
And I'm Rob.
If you love Star Wars...
and you listen to podcasts...
then you should check out our show, Talk Star Wars.
You can subscribe to Talk Star Wars on iTunes.
And find us on Stitcher Radio.
And find full episodes of the podcast on our YouTube channel.
You can find the podcast and everything else we do at talkstarwars.co.uk.
And you can play with us on Twitter by following at Talk Star Wars.
You should also head to facebook.com/talkstarwars and like our Facebook page.
Or we will strike you down with all of our hatred and your journey towards the dark side will be complete.
That's not cool.
I've said it now.
Head to talkstarwars.co.uk and join us as we talk Star Wars.
Or else.
And we're back. Done there with listening to the guys from Talk Star Wars. Again, like I said, go check them out. Do yourselves a favor and enrich your Star Wars life. You won't regret it. And we're back now with our random thoughts and questions segment. And I think James has something he wants to say.
Well, before we get into the most random stuff that's completely off or out of the galaxy far, far away. First, I want to give a shout out to the caterers. This week's... spread was exceptionally good. I always like taking the break in the break room. If they're international, by the way, I think the guys at Talk Star Wars are looking for an upgrade at their catering service.
yeah, the sausage rolls were exquisite tonight.
Yeah, I like the lobster. That was a nice touch.
Yeah, that was my favorite.
In the pasta, the lobster in the pasta was good. So the guys over at Talk Star Wars this week brought up something, talked about something that I hadn't, I don't think we talked about in length. And it's I'll put spoiler alert because I don't know where their source was for this, but apparently there's a scene coming up where Luke completely dismantles a lightsaber, maybe his lightsaber, using the Force. Like, first of all, you guys know about this, right? Or is this new?
Yeah, I've heard this.
Okay. So if this is true, the guys over at Talk Star Wars basically said they didn't think that this would be something that played out, that it was sort of maybe a rumor that had gone awry, that maybe there was some truth to it, especially Mark said maybe there was some truth to it, but it sounded a little too hokey. And that certainly it didn't make sense or didn't fit with where we think the movie's going to take off. And it would be weird for her to train her that way, sort of to match what Yoda did. They sort of were comparing it to the scene where Yoda lifts
The X-Wing
out of the swamp to show his, to show his Padawan or his apprentice how powerful the Force is. But I totally think that could be the end of her training scene. I disagree with the guys. I think it's like a next level. If what she struggles with through her training is like the intricacies of what the Force can do, or doing more than one thing at once, focusing her mind to do more than one thing at once, then doing something instant, like dismantling a lightsaber, I think is like sort of a perfect demo. And very different than lifting out. Because what's he going to do? Lift something bigger and heavier than Yoda did? So I think it's sort of a nice or a neat way for him to have the same scene in a much different way. What do you guys think?
I gotta get in here, man. Like, if basically in Clone Wars, there's a wicked story arc where these children, these Padawans, kind of get like separated and they're on their own a bit, And these Padawans, their first trial, they're almost Jedi, kind of. And they have to go get their kyber crystals. So this is all canon, right? So these kids, so it's canon. Basically, the way a Jedi would build a lightsaber is they use their minds. Like, these kids, they're all sitting there in a circle. And you see them, they're levitating every piece of their lightsaber, all these pieces, and they're trying to make it work,
So yeah, it's for sure. I mean, I didn't know that, but I mean, that just lends more weight to the idea that it's possible. And since we know the kyber crystals are going to be super important, or could be very important in this saga, dismantling the lightsaber to its pieces would be, you know, a good way to talk about or expose that too, right?
Yeah, like basically like him showing her, or him having her build her own saber, or him having to build a new saber for himself.
What do you think? I've been quiet through all this. What are your thoughts on that scene?
I think it's possible. I don't know the details of what saber he's dismantling, but I don't think it's going to be a new one. From everything we know,
it would make sense if it was his, the one that she brings.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's got his green one from Jedi. I think that's been kind of sussed out here in concept art that people have seen and that has leaked. That he still has his trusty green lightsaber.
Yeah.
And Rey, of course, is bringing old Bluey back. So if he's gonna dismantle one, obviously it's gonna be one of those two. I don't know. I have a hard time envisioning the reason for why they'd want to do that. But I mean, in a vacuum, I agree with you, James, that it is sort of, it's a cool way for Luke to impress upon Rey what the Force can do. In sort of that way, where instead of lifting something big and heavy, like Yoda did,
right,
that to do something small and intricate, where you would need probably the insane dexterity,
mental dexterity. Yeah. That's a good way to put it. I like that term. Yes, I agree.
Yep. I suppose it could work. I just don't know why he would want to dismantle it. You know, sometimes when you take apart one of these things, it's hard to get them back together.
he who breaks something apart to find out how it's made has left the path of wisdom. That's a quote from Tolkien. So I'll throw that into our podcast.
That's awesome.
That nice job.
Yeah.
I feel like you deserve some extra credit for that one. Wow, that's a really good. It's totally appropriate, right? Yeah. Like sometimes you go and you fiddle around under the hood of your car, and you pull out a bunch of bolts and you can't take out six. And then when you put it all back together, you can only find spots for five.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, oh no. And you look up all over the place and you don't want to take it apart again. And then you have to make that choice. Do I really need this bolt? What was this holding? I don't know.
My dad would always say, no, that's the extra pieces. They always put in some extra pieces.
In other words, to hell with it.
Yep.
Let's go get a beer.
That's sturdy.
Yeah, cool story though. I mean, I don't know how I feel about it in the end. Like, I don't see the need for it. And I feel like I've seen them, like Corey said, they did that arc in the Clone Wars. I don't think I need to see it on screen again. Well, and I do wonder what it would look like.
One way to say, it's a bit of fan, it could be fan service in a way too, since I didn't know it was already sort of hashed out in a way. But I mean, it all depends on what, you know, what the dialogue is and what the training is. It could make a ton of sense. We're guessing at what we think the training is going to be like, or, you know, what the first few scenes are going to be like with Rey and Luke. But, in you know, depending on how they set it up, it could make sense. And all I'm saying is I think it's more of a good idea than a hokey idea in my mind. I like it. I like the way it sounds personally.
Yeah, I'm open to it. I can't say it's something that I'm looking forward to. Like, I hope they do this. Like, if it's not in the movie, I'll probably have a little secret sigh of relief.
Okay, fair enough.
But if it is, I'll just hope that
they do it well.
They do it well and that it seems natural.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a purpose to it.
Well, I would certainly hope for that. All right, I got a question. I think I asked. I don't know if I asked the guys at Talk Star Wars, but if I haven't, I will. What's the future, do you think, for the Millennium Falcon? I was thinking about this the other day. So do you think it's something that stays as is? It underwent very minor changes from the original trilogy to what we saw in The Force Awakens. Like, it was still, if you weren't paying attention, you would think it was completely the same ship. So do you think they keep it that way forever? As long as Star Wars is a thing for us, the Falcon is always going to look the way it does? Or do you think they, at one point, they're like, you know what, we've had this ship in our marketing plans now for 40 years. It's time to get rid of this thing. Or do you think they, no, we got to keep this thing. It's iconic to the Star Wars brand, but I'm so sick of this look. Let's revamp it. Let's pretend they brought the Falcon to the auto shop, to the body shop, and gave it a facelift. So which of those do you think is the more likely scenario?
Well, to me, I don't like the idea of giving it a facelift. Like, the only way I could see it being changed or modified would be to be, like, souped up, like a sleeper, like, car, you know? Like, you look at it from the outside, and you're like, this is a hunk of junk. But, like, on the inside, like, all the wiring's good. Like, you're good to go.
That's,
like,
what, that's what the Falcon is already.
Yeah, but it's a piece of junk still. It's always breaking down on them. So now the real question is, be like, who's the captain of the Falcon now? Is it Chewie or is it Rey? So whose ship is the Falcon's now? Like, no one knows. That's up in the air. So whoever's kind of running the ship, like, if it's Rey's ship, I see her kind of taking care of it a bit better.
There was
saying, hey, we gotta fix this.
Yeah, there was not one scene in the last Star Wars movie that alluded to Chewie taking over as captain. There was not one acknowledgement. There was not one, like, where he piloted, or there was not one scene where they gave any indication. I'm convinced it's going to be Rey.
Yeah, I agree. It feels like Chewie is always destined to be the co-pilot of whatever he's involved with.
Yeah, and sorry to cut you off, Corey. I agree with you 100%. I do not want to see it really given a facelift. I think they blow it up eventually. They crash it and it dies. As you were asking the question, I was wondering, it's almost like, is the Falcon more unkillable than Han?
Huh. Imagine. I think I'd almost be more hurt to see this Falcon.
No, yeah, I know. Fans would be really hurt. I wonder which could they do that? Imagine they blew up the Falcon in the next movie.
How dare you?
It'd be the trilogy. Yeah, like, it'd be the trilogy that just killed the fans, and then Chewie goes in the third one, Kyle.
Chewie goes with the Falcon.
There are some deaths like I would not be able to prepare for. Like I said before in the podcast, the learning about Chewie's death in the EU is what drove me away from the EU. Completely. I closed the book on the EU, so to speak, and I never, ever went back. And we'll get to that more in a few minutes here. But as far as the Falcon goes, you know, I ask myself these questions and I never come to a resolution, because I can make cases for all of them where they just keep it as old faithful forever. And it's always something recognizable to us fans as this piece of junk that can do the Kessel run.
Yeah, I was going to say it too. You have to, you just have to make that reference. That's the speed reference.
Or I can see them saying, you know what, it's time to move away from this ship. It's dated, man. It's more than dated. It's had its day in the sun. We want to do something new. And we've got a new character. We need to, we get that these ships can be their own personalities unto themselves. And we need something new. And then, so they would just do away with the Falcon and destroy it, have it stolen again. Who knows?
No, they won't have it stolen. If they decide to get rid of it, it'll crash. Or get shot out of the air.
I mean, because it got pretty beaten up in The Force Awakens, right? And if TIE Fighter pilots were good shots at all, it never would have got off the ground. Like, how many shots did they have to take out a idle Millennium Falcon just sitting there on the ground? And they missed every time. No shields, sit and duck, and they missed.
Stormtroopers can't shoot, dude.
Can't shoot. It doesn't matter what kind of weapon systems you give them, they can't shoot.
Nope.
I still believe the Falcon's, like, blessed with the Force. That ship is, it's awesome. It's just, it's not meant to, it's always meant to bring you right to the edge and then save you.
Can a ship have midichlorian?
And it's not 91 octane, it's just midichlorian.
it's liquid Schwartz.
It could be liquid Schwartz. They can make that canon. But like, I wonder, like, could they go down the road where they beat the Falcon up even more than they did in The Force Awakens, where they lead viewers to think that, man, they just destroyed the Falcon. Like, they who knows? They blow it up partially or something. And then by the end of the movie, somebody has fixed it up and it looks drastically different. It's still recognizable as the Falcon, but it's somehow it's sleeker, it's different colors, who knows?
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's a good way of looking at it. If it were to happen, it would be something like that. I would see it going down like that.
I don't like it.
I don't like it either, though.
Yeah, you know, I always try to, because I always want things, I think Star Wars fans, not that we're, yeah, I guess we're creatures of habit, right? We want kind of things to stay familiar and the same, right?
Yeah,
we want
you could do that when there were only six movies. You can't do that with the idea that there's going to be dozens of movies. You can't
have exactly. Like
in 25 movies from now, where the good guys are still escaping and hiding in that. If the whole Empire doesn't know about that smuggler's hatch, you know?
Somebody pull up the goddamn schematics of that ship.
It's just to a point that it's just, you can't have it running forever.
And it's also to a point where, do you see any 1910 Model T Fords running around the roads that are the fastest car on the road?
It would get pulled over just for that. What? Whoa, what the hell? That's got to be a smuggler. Who drives one of those?
Yeah, like, do you see any hot rods from the 30s that are still the fastest car on the road? Like, when was the last time you were driving to work and a hot rod just zipped past you? Hey, there goes the fastest car in the galaxy.
Exactly.
So at some point, like, you would think, just for how old Star Wars as a franchise is, the Falcon somehow becomes obsolete.
It already looks that way. In this movie, in The Force Awakens, you kind of get that impression a bit. Like, it's ancient, like the gun pit where Finn's in there. You can see it just looks mechanical and old.
And that's its whole appeal, right?
Yeah.
That's the Falcon's entire appeal, is that it's an old, vintage-looking, crusty ship. But like they said in New Hope, it's got it where it counts. But how long can you play with that for? And if the answer is forever, great. That's fine with me. But I'm trying not to be like the lazy Star Wars fan who just doesn't want anything to ever change.
Well, if you're a mechanic in space or whatever, like, unless anything drastic happens in like an accident or something like that, the hull's breached, then yeah, I could see them kind of changing it up a bit, but keeping the original theme. But I don't think it's going to happen. And I hope it doesn't.
All right. Fair enough. I mean, I think either way, I think we're a long way off from that. I don't think the Falcon's going anywhere anytime soon.
No, I don't either.
Okay. So, I mean, we touched on it while we were answering that question. So I'll skip ahead to this question from Brian on Twitter. Do you guys feel betrayed at all, or were you upset that Disney did away with 20 to 30 years of great stories in the extended universe and are no longer canon? Like books, comics, games, all that stuff that used to be able, like fans used to be able to say, well, this happened next and this character came in at this point and all these things that informed the entire Star Wars saga, all that stuff just summarily dismissed.
Okay, can I go first?
Yeah, go for it.
Of course.
Would the fans of the extended universe, given the choice, choose to keep it over having new movies? Because that would be the choice you would have to make. You're handcuffing the writers and directors in producing anything new to tell you as a fan, if you want to hold them to all this stuff that was never supposed to be movie material. Like, the storylines got taken in all these crazy twists and turns because they were in video games and comics and novels. And so it'd be impossible to tell those stories in movie form, you know, to keep everybody happy. It's not logistically possible. There'd be no suspense because everybody would know everything that happens. So the movies wouldn't be as profitable. So I would just ask the people who are upset, like, do you realize that the reason that you've lost your canon is because they're making new movies for you. And there's nothing to say that anything that's really good from extended universe can't be used, right?
Of course. They reserve that right to pull in whatever they want.
So I think it's just, you know, it sort of sucks if you were a fan. I get it. But you have to, if you're also going to be a fan of the movies, then you have to accept it as like a necessary evil.
Well, there was that Star Wars fandom is big enough and segmented enough that there are fans who only like the EU.
I'm sure. And power to them. No problem.
But they were the wackos that, or some of them anyway, they had their extremists who were so angry. They were the ones petitioning to boycott The Force Awakens. And they were the ones that said that they're going to go and they're going to just go all over social media and spoil The Force Awakens. They're going to post it to Facebook. They're going to put it on Twitter. They're going to ruin the Force Awakens for everybody just because they're angry that Legends had been, or the EU had been canceled. Ooh. Which, of course, that's how many words can we come up to describe how immature and petulant and petty and,
well, and when you've got a fan base of millions and millions of people, and so like take the like maybe, you know, 0.1% are really crazy. That's still quite a few really crazy people.
That's still like 10,000 people, right?
So yeah, you know, you can't take everybody seriously, and unfortunately, you can't make everybody happy. So, I mean, if they would have just said, "Yeah, it's all still canon. We're gonna make the movie," so those who have read the novels, you know what's going on. You know, it's not good marketing. They're never gonna do that. So let them take let them take what they want, and let them keep you guessing what they're gonna keep and what they're not.
100%. Yeah, I am not. I, like I said when we were talking about the Falcon, when I knew what they were doing with Chewie, that was it for me. I was already sort of like hit and miss on the EU back in the 90s. Some stuff I really liked, some stuff I didn't like at all. But I read it all. And Corey, I think, still has all of our EU books occupying a couple big boxes. But then when I heard about Vector Prime and that Chewie was dead in this book, the EU was dead to me. I think at that point I said, "Corey, take all these books. I'm out. I'm done. I can't read this anymore." I was just that upset about that, and I am not at all betrayed or upset. How do you feel, Corey?
I think James put it perfectly what he had said, and basically saying that, you know, pick and choose movies or your old EU. But you also both said it as well. My opinion would be, you know, they have the ability and the right to pick and choose what they want from the EU and kind of bring it in as they see fit. I think a lot of people were disappointed in the fact that there were no Jason and Jaina Solo or Mara Jade Skywalker.
Oh, but aren't there? Aren't there?
Oh, faithful listeners know what that is, what James is getting at there.
They're half siblings, by the way. I've amended my theory to include half siblings just for all listeners.
you're slowly loosening the bolts on your theory.
Oh, here. Not at all. Half siblings to me fits completely under my original umbrella parent idea that they're brother and sister. Half brother and sister really are the same.
So as long as one parent is common.
Correct.
All right.
Moving on.
Okay, so Brian had a second question. And it's a little bit random, but I think it's funny because I want to get your guys' perspective. So Chewie and Spock are playing a game of Dejarik. So that's that little chess game on the Falcon.
Yeah.
And you know, Chewie's quite the player.
Chewie rips his arms off. Sorry, go on.
And of course, we know Spock. Spock is an absolute genius with his logic and such. So they're playing a game and a fight breaks out. It comes to blows. Never mind who wins the game of Dejarik. I think it's unwinnable for Chewie.
Yes, agreed.
But who wins the fight?
Oh, come on. I stand by my statement. Chewie rips his arms off.
Well, I'm inclined to agree because if Spock has one chance to get the nerve pinch in.
I don't even know if do you even know if the anatomy of a Wookiee is the same as a human? Would that even work on him?
Let's assume yes.
I'm not gonna just assume.
Well, I don't have the anatomy of a Wookiee.
I don't think he can get the leverage. He's too tall. He couldn't get the leverage he needs to apply it, really. You'd have to be standing on a chair.
Well, Spock's pretty tall. I mean, granted, he's not 7 feet tall like a Wookiee, but he's not height challenged in any way. I think I think he's got one chance to get that Vulcan nerf pinch in, and that's it. If he doesn't do it, like you said, the arms are coming off.
I think if we're looking at the tail of the tape, I think Chewie's got the reach. He gets anywhere near him to get that death grip on him. Chewie's got him by the arms, and then all of a sudden he's not feeling so good anymore, Spock.
No. Yeah, it's yeah, like Spock's got that. He's always going to have that mental edge, right? But it's a very small edge, and if you don't use it, it's gone and you're dead. It's almost like when you come face to face with a bear in the forest, you probably have like 1 second to make up your mind if you're going to like back away or roll up into a ball.
That's a good point. Do you think that Spock could Vulcan death grip a bear?
No.
No.
Well, then he couldn't do it to Chewie either.
Well, but how could you grab a bear in the?
That's what I'm. You're seeing a guy in a costume. I'm thinking of a Wookiee.
Like you think the nerves that are effective towards a Vulcan nerve pinch could be like in Chewie's ass.
And just the muscularity and just the massiveness. Like if you think of grabbing a bear, I think that's what it's like to grab a Wookiee. You know what I mean? It's an animal. It's a big, solid,
it's a big dog.
It's massive. Sorry, Brian. Yeah,
I think you guys aren't giving still enough credit to Spock. I think it would actually kind of be a good fight because I love that fight scene between Captain Kirk and Spock in the movies.
I think I would take the Wookiee over Kirk, to be honest with you.
Oh, come on.
My friend Paul's going to be super mad because he thinks that Spock can beat up anyone in the universe because he always wins.
Kirk, two-handed, like sledgehammer.
You're channeling my friend Paul right now.
Yeah. Everybody knows that Kirk's two-handed club is lethal. It's like the golden gun in GoldenEye.
It's like Thor's hammer, according to my friend Paul. It's quite annoying.
He's not wrong, man. That Kirk's double-handed club, double-fisted club, whatever you want to call it.
Our friend Paul. You know Paul. I'm talking about Paul Trenier.
Of course. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. It's a great debate.
It's not a great debate.
Because Kirk was tough, man.
He puts him up against Superman, and he's like, yeah, but if Kirk gets him with the two-handed...
Yeah. Actually, in my own head, like whenever you put these like Hollywood one-man army guys against each other, against other heroes, the final two always boil down to Kirk versus John McClane.
Oh, my God.
Just like the two toughest guys, like the other guys would just get tired of beating them down. And then John McClane would just punch him in the nuts or something, or Kirk would get in the double-handed club.
Like when Homer goes into boxing, they just the opponent punches themselves out.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
Like you can't beat Kirk McClane, the old Canucks goalie. You can't beat Captain Kirk or John McClane.
Apparently not.
You just can't do it.
Or Indiana Jones. He takes a mad beatings.
Indy couldn't win that fight against Kirk or John McClane.
Right, like Kirk would come with him at the club and he'd just pull his revolver out.
Brian, do you see what you did to us with this question?
You brought us back to a debate we've been having for 20 years, if not longer. Yeah, thanks, Brian. I love these random questions.
Yeah, it was fun.
So Rob at Talk Star Wars, he's got one. I think this is it, guys. We're going to wrap it up after this.
Well, okay, then since you brought up his name, I just wanted to say great dramatic reading last week, Rob. And please record yourself reading the entire Lord of the Rings trilogy for me. Okay, that's all.
He's got plenty of time for that.
It's probably 8 or 9 hours worth.
If you're successfully, if you can nail it in one take.
Yeah, you get it in one take.
No pressure, Rob.
He's got a great voice, though. Did you hear him do that dramatic reading on the show last week?
Yeah, of course.
He's got a voice for radio. At any rate, Rob's question is,
would you rather work as a bounty hunter for Jabba the Hutt or be an Inquisitor? So, James, you're at a disadvantage for this one.
I'm going to choose bounty hunter because I don't know what it entails to be an Inquisitor.
You basically work... You're in a way, you're Vader and the Emperor's bounty hunter, except you hunt Jedi.
And you're a Force user, but you're not Sith, but you're dark.
I'll still take bounty hunter. And only,
I agree.
Only because of the boss. I think I'd as terrible a dude as he seems to be, I'd much rather have Jabba pissed off at me than Vader or
the Emperor.
Yeah.
Yep. I think it's unanimous there. And there's no pay as an Inquisitor. Like you, I feel like the only thanks you get is that they don't kill you.
So it's like being a teacher.
I guess kind of. Yeah. I'm not a teacher, but
high school teacher. Yeah, no, that's it.
That's my thought because I feel like at one point you might have enough credits in your account working for Jabba the Hutt that you can just call it quits and live a decent life, and you can be out of all that garbage. Whereas if you're an Inquisitor for Vader / the Emperor, when they're done with you, they kill you. There's no retirement home. There's no happy island for former Inquisitors to go hang out in. You're done. They just crush you.
Yeah, I agree.
It's unanimous. Rob, that was a bad question. Don't send any more. No, I'm kidding. Please send more questions. We love questions. Hey, that's it, guys.
Awesome.
Well, guys, thanks everybody for listening. Thanks to Rob and Brian for your awesome questions. Corey, tell the good people where they can find you.
Find me at Chop Rules on Twitter with a Z.
Pretty sure that's a Z.
I'm at Tumbling Saber on Twitter. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. And that's it for this week, guys. We'll check you again next week in episode 32. Thanks again so much for listening. Have yourselves a good week, and bye for now.
Self-fulfilling prophecy, got the best of me. They've been making me, they've been taking me farther and further from. Watching you walking away from me. Were you watching me?